John Constantine, a Hellblazer podcast.
Hey everybody, and welcome back. Before we get into the episode, just want to let you know that this is the free version of the podcast, and all that means is that we are way behind where I'm at in Patreon. So if you are loving this podcast and you need more John Constantine in your life, definitely go check us out at patreon.com/planestrainsandcomicbooks and sign up for the Hellblazer tier, where you'll get access to the entire Hellblazer library that I've recorded so far. And also, you get access to the exclusive episodes of the Planes, Trains, and Comic Books main podcast. So if any of that sounds good to you, definitely go over to patreon.com/planestrainsandcomicbooks, all one word, and sign up there. And with that out of the way, let's get into the issue. Today we are reading Hellblazer number 73, and just a little catch-up on what was going on in the last issue. John is in New York. He's kind of on vacation, I guess, because he's just getting over being homeless for a bunch of months. And he wanted to get away from London and England for a while and recharge in New York. But unfortunately for him, he was spotted by someone who knew him from back in the day. And this guy was not a friend. In fact, from what he said, he actually killed one of John's friends in 1983. And John and this man actually came face to face, but John did not recognize him and just generally was not talking about, you know, anything evil or bad. He was just having a drink with his friend who was a bartender. So this man who bumped into John, whose name is Zierke, actually ends up working for Papa Midnight. And he interprets John's attitude and his kind of not being into evil stuff at the moment as John losing his edge. So he takes this information to Papa Midnight, and Papa Midnight decides he's going to mess with John. And he does some kind of spell that makes John go witch walking, he calls it. And what it really seems like is that John is seeing like two different versions of New York. There's the reality version, and then there's the witch-walking version, which is full of people who are part demon, or they look like demons. So he's just starting to see all this crazy stuff. And at the end of the last issue, he had run out of the bar, and he was starting to freak out because more and more of the world was becoming the witch-walking version of it. And that is where we left off with that issue. So first things first, with issue 73, we've got the cover here. We see what looks like a large dead man hanging from a light post, and he is tied to it like with ropes around his whole body, so it's not just like by his neck or something. And we see carved into his chest is the words W40 Street, so West 40th Street. And we can see on the cover that this is written by Garth Ennis with art by Steve Dillon. And as we turn to the first page, we see a man in a suit who is walking in the middle of nowhere. It kind of looks like the desert where there's just a long blacktop road, and then on either side of that is just flat dirt. And the man is holding the back of his head, and you can definitely see a lot of blood, and there's a big wound. So as the man walks, the narration says, "The man with the hole in his head is going north. It hurt like hell keeping his brains crammed in there, but he ignored the pain as best he could. That way, he didn't have to face up to what had happened. All that time, and not once did he admit it. Like a woman whose kid's gone under a truck. A litany of, 'No, no, you're wrong. He'll come through that door for this dinner any second, any second.' When truth is your enemy, that's when you fight the hardest. But that's people for you." So we see this man holding his head, walking down the road, and we can't see his face ever. But while this narration is going on, we definitely see him pull his hand away from his head, and we see a giant hole where his brains would be. And there's a bunch of skull and brain and other kind of fluids on his hand. And he moves it to in front of his face so that he can see exactly what is covering his hand. And when he looks at it, he sees bits of bone and blood and everything. And then we get a very close up of his face. So we can't actually make out exactly anything about it, other than this is a white man and he has brown eyebrows. And we see that whatever he saw definitely made him sad. And he closes his eyes tight and begins to weep, but from the narration, it makes it seem like he's kind of lying to himself about how bad his wound is, and he's not wanting to come to terms with reality. Then we cut to New York City, where a bunch of people are standing around John on the street because he's starting to freak out. He's seeing things that aren't there, but he's in the real world, so everybody else doesn't see any of this stuff, and they just see a man who's freaking out. So because so many people are congregating around John, this catches the attention of a police car that's passing by, and as the passenger officer looks out the window, he sees John and he says, "Jesus, check this out." And then the driver looks over and sees John, but of course they don't know it's John. They just think it's some crazy guy who's on the ground freaking out. So the officer who's driving looks at his buddy and says, "Oh shit." And the passenger officer says, "Why us, Lord?" I guess because they don't want to deal with someone they perceive as just being crazy at the moment. So they park and they get out of their car and they walk to John. And as they do, they begin to disperse the people saying, "Okay, people, move along. He's just high or something. So get your asses out of here, huh?" Then as the two officers stand over John, who's on his hands and knees on the ground, the passenger officer, who's a young white man, says sarcastically, "Course, I joined because I want to make a difference." And the driver officer, who is an older white man, who's kind of overweight with a mustache, says, "Makes you proud, don't it?" And then he reaches down and grabs John by his jacket and lifts him up, and he asks, "Where you going? You can't go crawling around the sidewalk like a prick. Where are you going?" And all John can do is say, So the old officer drops him and says, "Marvelous." And then he looks at his partner and says, "Any ID?" Then the younger officer says, "Let me look." And then he bends down and begins to rifle through John's pockets, and he finds a bunch of money. And the young officer smiles and looks at his partner and says, "A shitload." And the older officer says, "Hell with it. We could throw his ass in the shelter on the way past, right?" And the younger officer answers, "Man, a means like this, I'd be happy to." And I believe they're insinuating that these cops are just going to take his money and then drop him off at a homeless shelter. So they lift John up, and he's still just saying, "Whoa." But as the officers pull him to his feet, he is able to stand on his own and kind of walk forward. And as John slowly moves towards the police car, the older officer that is holding him says, "Be cool, Rip Van Jerkoff. Just taking you somewhere safe." But the closer they begin to move to the police car, John actually yells out, "No!" And it seems like he begins to struggle because the older officer says, "God damn!" And the younger officer who's standing to the side says, "He doesn't like the car." But the police don't really care, and as they're shoving him into the back of their police vehicle, they actually smash his head into the surrounding door frame, and this makes John stop resisting. And as the older officer does this, he says, "Doing you a favor, asshole." And as John collapses into the back seat, we hear the younger partner ask, "Donuts?" And the older officer counters, "Pizza." So this is just a very nonchalant, meeting for them. I'm sure they see homeless people or maybe drunks that they can just round up and steal their money from and then take them to the homeless shelter and then afterwards just get some food, apparently. And then as we turn the page, we get a full page splash of what John is seeing in his mind. And just like the last page of issue 72, he is in the middle of a very foggy, very imposing New York City. And he's just staring up at the tall buildings, and there's no one around that he can see, at least. And we see the name of this issue is Damnation's Flame Part 2, Broadway the Hard Way. So as John stands in the middle of the foggy street, he looks around and he's just confused. And then all of a sudden he hears someone say, "What you might call a cold day in hell, huh, Pilgrim?" And as John turns to see who's talking, he sees an African-American man with glasses and a flat top. And the man is wearing lots of layers of clothes. Like, he's got a long sleeve sweater on, but over that he's got an olive green poncho that's tied with a rope around his waist. And as he approaches John, he kind of sizes John up and he says, new in town?" And John, who's still confused, looks at him and says, "This isn't..." And the man cuts him off saying, "No, it ain't hell. It's New York, the Big Apple. What you at?" And John is confused by this last question and he says, "Huh?" But the man doesn't bring back what he was asking. He just asks another question saying, "Hungry?" And John says, "Yeah." And then the man turns and he begins to walk away from John, kind of saying, "Follow me." So John begins to walk with him. And as they walk, John begins to speak to him saying, I haven't got a freaking clue where, for Christ's sake." And the man replies, "British, right? You're probably kind of culture shocked." And as they're talking, we can definitely see fog coming out of their mouth. So it seems like it's pretty cold here. And as they walk, John is cinching his coat tighter around him because of how cold it is. And he replies to the man, I didn't mean that. Where are we? And how can it be cold when the sodding sky's on fire? And the sky is not actually on fire, but it's like a really, really deep red. And as John says this, the man who was walking with him looks up at the sky and says, I told you, New York. And the sky? Shit, I don't know. Red sky at night, balls frozen off. And John cuts in, Christ, yeah. Brass monkeys are looking for welders. Where'd you say we were going, mate? And the man replies, few of us in Central Park. We'll help you out. Maybe you help us out. Shit, move over to the side. It's gonna snow. So they go under an awning that's on a sidewalk next to them, and then it does begin to snow, and as John looks at it, he holds his hand out and he catches one of the flakes and he says, this isn't bloody snow. And the man replies, sure it is. It's nearly over. And then John grabs one of the flakes and he actually puts one in his mouth and he says, this is crack. Meaning like crack cocaine, I assume. But the man doesn't really reply. He just says, hmm. And then as they begin to walk again, he says, dreaming of a white Christmas, pilgrim. So they walk a bit more, and as they do, they're approaching an intersection, and there's a streetlight, and hanging from that streetlight is the body of a man, and he is hanging by his neck. So it seems this was the panel that was the inspiration for the cover, although this man is a lot more skinny, and like I said, is hung by his neck, as opposed to the one on the cover that is just bound to a street lamp. And the W40 that's carved in his chest obviously means West 40th Street, and when John sees the man hanging there, he says, oh, bloody hell. And the man John's walking with looks up and says, yeah, this pisses me off. I thought we got all of them. And John is confused and he asks, you what? And the man replies, street signs. So apparently in this version of New York, street signs are bodies that are hung and have the street names carved into the chest of them. And John seems to be getting more and more confused. Maybe his mind is fighting back at whatever's happening to him. So he begins to rub his head and he says, what are you on about? Look, I don't know what the frig's wrong with me here. Bloody New York's gone mental, and I can't even start to get a grip, right? The bit of me that's meant to, shit, I don't know, ask questions, deal with it, is on the blink. And what do you mean, got all of them? And the man doesn't really acknowledge most of John's tirade, but he does answer cryptically, saying, every little bit helps. And John doesn't really say anything about the man being evasive. He just asks another question, saying, where did everyone go anyway? And the man replies, never left. Folks are around, you know, here and there. We all hang out in the park, like I said. And this answer doesn't really make sense to John because apparently in the 90s, Central Park was not a nice place to go in. So John asked the man, Central Park's supposed to be a bloody nightmare, according to the news. What about that girl who got raped? What was it, like 20 times? But the man doesn't seem to know what John's talking about, and he just asks, her name Liberty? And this confuses John, and he asks, Liberty? And the man replies, in the park. Ho getting raped. Name of Liberty. And at this, John's face gets very suspicious of this man. I don't know if he thinks the guy's messing with him or maybe he's the one doing this to John. But John says to him, look, no offense, right? But I'm having an awful shit day. And the last thing I need is someone's idea of a quietly insightful metaphor. Because that's when I know I'm in hell. But the man just keeps looking forward, doesn't really acknowledge John's sarcasm there. And he says, talk all the weird shit you want, Pilgrim. I'm just saying, they got this bitch called Liberty in Sheep's Meadow, and they screw her 50, 60 times a day. And then John's face gets kind of worried, and he says, you mean a real girl? And the man replies, more or less. And John asks, why? And the man nonchalantly says, she deserves it. She's a hoe. And John looks at the man with disgust when he says this, because in John's mind, if they're talking about a real person, then that is one of the most horrible things John has ever heard. And the man notices John looking at him and says, what are you looking at? And John unleashes, for Christ's friggin' sake, it's not often I run into a bigger bastard than myself, but you were telling me they've got some girl in there and you think... And then the man cuts John off saying, I said more or less. Bitch from the harbor, you know, stands on the island with her big old torch and her spiky hat. Someone just got pissed at her one day, right? So they hauled her ass uptown and into the bushes, and they've been giving it to her ever since. And John doesn't show if he's understanding what the guy's saying yet, but basically, the man is talking about the Statue of Liberty, obviously. So to this new information, John says, Jesus Christ, who's they? And the man answers, I don't know, but I ain't gonna find out. I'm telling you, she deserves it. She's a hoe, just like the friggin' word. And John doesn't understand what that means, and he says, huh? And the man answers, Liberty, hoe of a word, Pilgrim. Like, shit, where you want to start? Justice, decency, mercy, innocent, kindness. You got the power? You can have them words. And they'll mean what you want and do what you want. Ho words. And I think John is just playing along here because, obviously, even though that makes sense, like, word-wise, it's still kind of confusing in this reality where John thinks he's in New York. But John just replies, I see. So what words do you like? And the man replies, I get by with horseshit and asshole. And then something catches his attention, and the man says to John, hey, you're gonna like this. And as we turn the page, we see the reveal of a building that is shot full of holes, and it's actually bleeding out of those holes, and out of the front stoop, a bunch of blood is pouring out and pooling onto the street. So the two men turn and approach it, and John gets a little bit closer, so the man says, gonna ruin your shoes, because of all the blood on the ground. And John asks him, where's it all coming from? And the man replies, 2,000 people lived in there, you know, 8 pints each. And then John does actually walk up to the building through the blood, and he peeks inside one of the bullet holes in the building, and we don't see what he sees, but we can definitely tell there's something in there that looks horrific, because John's face looks kind of pale and white, and he says, it's like friggin' Belson in there. And the man says to John, crazy shit. Happened a while back. These dudes show up and pick this place out and start shooting. A few cowboys, a few cops, a couple soldiers. And they're just shooting and shooting and shooting. And I'm watching across the street, right? Takes a while to realize, but they all look the same, yeah? Matter of fact, they're everyone my man Clint Eastwood ever played in his movies. Regular Death Squad. So what this man is saying is that all these different characters that Clint Eastwood has played showed up and began shooting at this building. And he just leaves it at that, too. Like, there's no questioning. John doesn't say anything after that. But as we turn the page, we see they finally are entering Central Park. And the man says, this is it. And John replies, good. I'm bloody starved. And I need to start working out what's going on. You live here? And as they walk further into the park, we see some people standing and sitting around a fire that's cooking something over it. And to John's question of, does the man live here? The man answers, we all do. And as they pass some of the people, the man says, hiya, Larry. And then he turns to a woman and says, Sally, found this guy. Give him something, will ya? So the man named Larry stands up from the fire, and we can see he's pretty disheveled. He's got, you know, very messy hair. He's got a beard. His clothes look tattered and torn. And Larry hands some kind of food to John. And as John eats it, Sally, who's a woman that's holding a baby, says kind of offhand to the man who was guiding John, kinda thin. And the man that was guiding John doesn't really say anything, he just grunts. But we do get a panel that makes it seem like John definitely heard her say that he was kinda thin. So this makes John suspicious, and he begins to look at his surroundings a little bit closer. And what John is eating looks like some kind of meat, maybe like beef jerky or something. And then he looks at the baby that Sally's holding, and the baby's also eating some meat. And then he looks back at the man Larry, who gave him the meat, and Larry has a blanket over his shoulders that's stitched together. And as John looks at it, he notices that there is a tattoo of a heart that says mother on it that is part of one of the patches of this quilt blanket. And that definitely confirms to John that these people are using humans for food and clothing. And right when he realizes that, all of a sudden the man that was guiding him pulls out a switchblade and opens it. But as we turn the page, we cut away from the weird reality that John is seeing in his head, and we cut to actual reality where John is being brought by the police to a men's homeless shelter. And as the older officer drags John up the steps of this homeless shelter, we can see that they definitely stop for pizza on the way to dropping John off, because the younger officer is eating pizza and he's commenting on how gross it is. And as the officer approaches the window of the homeless shelter, the officer says to the man inside, got one for you, Danny. And Danny, who's a fat, balding man who has a cigar in his mouth and looks kind of rough, looks at John and kind of gives him a once over and says, him? Why is he so special? And the older officer says, getting kind and generous in my old age, you know? And Danny sarcastically says, them two guineas on Delancey'd be with you on that one. 3 bullets each. Freaking generous to a fault. And then Danny turns to John and says, you listening? No drink, no pot, no rock. Don't screw with anyone and relieve yourself in the goddamn restroom. Soup at 9, coffee at 6, right? And John just stares at him with a blank face, and John is actually drooling, which just really shows how much he's not there at the moment. And as Danny watches John drool, he says, you're gonna fit right in here. So the older officer brings John into a room inside of the homeless shelter, and he says, "Move your ass." And when he pushes John through the door, we see John enter a room that's full of homeless men. And we can see some people are like side-eyeing John as he enters the room. And John just goes straight to one of the walls, and he just sinks down next to it. Then we cut back to the weird reality that John is in inside of his head. And we see John is being held by a couple of the homeless men in Central Park as the man who was his guide brings the switchblade up to John's face. And John is yelling out, "Get off! Get the friggin' hell off! No!" And John's guide says to him, "Just shut up for a second, pilgrim. You're gonna last us a couple meals, you know, and make us a nice warm coat." And that nice warm coat, the man stabs John in the neck, and we see that there's a whole bunch of blood that comes out. Then we see another homeless man approach John with a cleaver, and it looks like he's just gonna go straight at John, even though John's not fully dead yet. And John's guide says to the man with the cleaver, "Whoa, Pete, bleed him till he's weak, yeah?" And Pete says, "I'm so freaking hungry, Larry." But then everybody pauses, and Pete says to Larry, "You hear that?" And Larry yells out, "Shit!" And then everybody looks up to the sky that was attacking John, and they all look very scared on their face, and we can see there's some kind of flock of something up there flying around. And Pete yells out, "Freaking greenbacks! Scatter!" So all the homeless people run away and leave John falling to the ground. And as these birds come in, we actually get a better look at them, and they actually are U.S. dollar bills, which if you didn't know, one of the like slang terms for them is greenbacks. And not only are they flying all crazy and attacking people, but the dollar bills are talking, and they're saying things like, "I shot JFK. I created AIDS. I let Pearl Harbor happen. I was made from Nazi gold. I killed the last free Comanche. I burnt the Amazon. I danced on the bones in Vietnam. I armed Iraq's little Hitler. Burgers of shit to the world we starved. Torso babies born of crack. Airliners raining from the sky. South of the border, hell on earth. Screwed you all and screwed you good." So as the dollar bills attack the people who are running away, like the people that were going to eat John, we do see that John is passed out. He's bleeding out on the ground from his neck wound, and the dollar bills are not attacking him. Then we cut to Papa Midnight's tower, and he is still in his ceremonial garb, and he's staring at his sister's skull, and he's saying, "Nightfall, Sadella. Time to make the firelight, to huddle round and tell the tales that keep the dead at bay. You see it all in there. Tell me mine." And of course, we don't hear what his sister's skull is saying to him, but whatever it is, it makes Papa Midnight very happy because he gets a very big smile on his face. And we can assume that what he's hearing is what is happening to John right now in his weird dream landscape. Because we turn the page from that panel of him smiling very big to John bleeding out on the ground from his neck wound. And you can definitely tell that if this neck wound was real, John would for sure be dead because there is a whole bunch of blood that is underneath his body now. But as we turn the page and we see John lying in his puddle of blood, we see him move and then we see him stand up. And he looks around and everybody's gone and he's also no longer in Central Park. He's just in a foggy void again where there's a ground, but it's kind of gray. So John looks around, doesn't see anything, and I guess he decides might as well walk. So he begins to walk into the reddish fog. And eventually he ends up on what I believe is the Manhattan Bridge. And he's just standing on it, staring out over the water. And his narration says, "No day, no night. Walked 15 miles up Broadway at a sodden snail's pace. And nothing changes. No sun to come up. No stars even. And I don't care. Why don't I care? Why aren't I asking the questions? The where's and the why's and how's that'll help me get a grip. Get me going. Sort this out. Everything's gone out the bloody window, and the sky's bright red. But that's not the worst I've ever had happen, is it? I'm used to this sort of malarkey. Just grist to the mill. I should be able to walk it. But no questions." And the panels underneath his narration are showing John just looking kind of confused and not understanding why he has no drive to figure out what's going on. And also as he stands, he begins to feel his neck wound, and he actually sticks his fingers into his neck and feels inside the wound. And as he does this, his narration says, "Slit my throat. Sodden jugulars cut right the way through. And I'm not dead. And neither was anyone else. Anyone." And almost as if he's starting to see everything for what it really is, he begins to remember back to all the people he's seen in this place. The man hanging from the street sign, and he remembers now seeing the man's eyes open looking at him. And then all the people in Central Park, when he remembers them now, they all had fatal wounds on them as well. But this is just revealed now. When we saw them before, they did not have any wounds, except the man who was hanging as the street sign. He was obviously cut up and stuff, but they made it look like he was definitely dead before. So this is something that John is finally starting to put together. He's able to get past this brain fog a little bit, and he's seeing what this reality actually is. And also, as he's standing on this bridge, we've seen a couple panels where someone else is walking towards John kind of slowly, but John has not heard them yet. And he's just staring out over the water, finally being able to remember kind of what really is going on. And it all clicks for him. And his narration says, "And if I'm not dead with me throat cut and they can live through that, then nobody dies. And if nobody dies," and then John says out loud, "I'm in hell." But then the person who was walking up behind John says, "You are not in hell." And then we get a panel where we can see a better view of the person who's talking. And it is the man who was walking on the first page that was holding the back of his head closed from the head wound he has. And as John turns and sees him, the man continues saying, "I can tell you with 100% confidence that you are not in hell. You are in the United States of America. I can speak with this confidence because I am the president." And we see John's eyes get very, very wide, and his narration says, "Oh, bloody hell." And then finally, we get to see what John is staring at, who this person is. And you might have guessed it by what I was describing, but the man talking to John is President John F. Kennedy. And the president moves his hand from the back of his head, and he holds it out as if he's going to shake John's hand with his bloody, gross, brain-covered hand. Then we cut back to real New York, where John is inside the homeless shelter. And we see John is still in his, you know, conscious but unconscious state where he's drooling on the ground. And all these other homeless men are picking through his pockets. And one of them is saying, "What he got? Come on, what he got?" And the man who's rifling through John's pockets says, "Jack shit. Cops picked him clean. Hold on." And then the man going through John's pockets pulls out a British pound note. And the guy that was saying, you know, "Come on, hurry up," looks at it very confused and says, "The hell is that shit?" And the pickpocket looks at the bill and he answers, "The bitch, man. That's the queen. British queen. Dude's British." And the impatient man looks at John and he says, "Friggin' tourists." And he reaches down and unzips his fly. And then he begins to urinate on John as he says, "Welcome to America, asshole." And he's urinating directly on the side of John's face. But as the two men walk away, we see John isn't registering any of this. He's still not here mentally at all. And we are left with John being soaked in piss and inside of a homeless shelter. And also in his mind, talking to former President JFK. So I'm very intrigued to see what's going to happen in the next issue. So if you guys have any comments, questions, or suggestions, you can email me at planes, trains, and comic books, all one word at gmail.com. And we will see you on the next one.